It's our pleasure today to be talking with Nathan Sage. Mr. Sage is seeking the Democratic Party nomination as a candidate for the United States Senate for Iowa. Nathan was born at Mercy Hospital in Mason City and grew up in a working-class family as the second of four children. His father was an Air Force veteran who worked at a factory until he passed from cancer in 2007. His mother became a daycare and preschool teacher and a certified nursing assistant. She completed her career at Mercy Hospital before passing away from leukemia in 2022. After graduating from Mason City High School, Nathan enlisted in the Marine Corps, earning the rank of corporal. He served two deployments to Iraq during Operation Iraqi Freedom. While in Iraq, Nathan provided security and served as a mechanic for critical equipment. After returning from Iraq, Nathan enlisted in the Army, serving from 2008 to 13. Once again, he became a corporal and was part of the 1st Army Infantry Division, the Big Red One. Following military service, Nathan worked as a mechanic, servicing cars instead of tanks. He then used the GI Bill to attend Kansas State University. While getting his degree, he worked nights as a screen printer so his family could get by. After graduation, Nathan moved back to Iowa, where he served as news director and sports director for two radio stations and built relationships with community members and local business leaders. In May of 23, Nathan became executive director of the Knoxville, Iowa Chamber of Commerce, where he focused on economic development, supported local business, and fostered community pride. Nathan and his wife, Amanda, reside in Indianola, where they are raising two children and are active community members. Tell our listeners something about yourself they'll not find on your website or with a search engine.
I'm a huge Yankee fan, and I'm mad today because the Yankees got eliminated. So I'm a huge New York Yankees fan. That's one thing you'll never find.
Well, as you talk with people around the state, and I know you've been doing a lot of traveling, what are their most frequent concerns?
You know, they're worried about these cuts to Medicaid with the big bullcrap bill. They're very worried about the cuts to Medicaid. They're worried about water quality. They're worried about, you know, the farmers and how they're going to deal with the water quality issue. And they're worried, like they talked about, you know, cuts to Medicaid, and we've talked this whole time about how we're never going to cut Medicaid, and now they're going to do that. So people are also worried about Social Security as well. They talk about that. But just, you know, the affordability of life and people standing up and fighting for us. I think that's what they want more than anything. So those are the kind of the topics we get a lot of the time.
With your personal experience with Medicare and medical difficulties, and I've had two cancers myself, what would you do? What's your prescription for the healthcare situation?
Well, you know, when you look at it, one thing I always like to focus on is, like, there's a lot of money that goes into treating cancer, but not so much money that goes into preventing cancer and finding out those causes. And in Iowa, I think you look at what we have in Iowa with high radon problems, with our water quality being number one in the top 1% for the worst. So I think preventing those issues is where we really need to start. And I think, you know, hitting two birds with one stone. If you're treating our water problem and helping out with the water problem, you can obviously offset the problem we have with cancer. So I think when you look at it, doing the things we need to do to kind of prevent the issues that we're having with our water quality is a start. You know, incentivizing farmers to, you know, do good conservation efforts or to make sure that the drainage that we're seeing is not happening as frequently as bad is a good start. But, you know, that's the way I look at starting out preventing cancer. But I think also when you look at the healthcare system and the issues we have, first thing we have right now, we have the government shut down. We need these ACA tax extensions on these credits so that way we aren't seeing our premiums double. Right now, we need to get people insured. We need to make sure people have the healthcare that they can go to be seen, to be checked, to make sure they don't have the cancers they have. And a lot of people are avoiding that because they can't afford it. And we need to make healthcare affordable. And I think that's the first step.
Do you have an idea about how to make it affordable?
Well, I think when it comes to it, obviously we can extend Medicaid. You have to extend Medicaid, but I talk a lot about getting the middleman out of healthcare. And We have these pharmaceutical benefit managers that are the middleman in our healthcare, and they're a leech. They are a huge billion-dollar industry that is leeching a lot of our money. And so a lot of the cost that we have up front to be insured goes to these people that are literally leeching off the system, and we have to get them out of our system. I think that's what we, the way we can start to be able to make healthcare affordable for people.
Well, one of the problems that we have in doing in accomplishing that is the amount of money that's been injected into our political arena. Do you
Yeah,
have
absolutely.
going to deal with that excessive amount of money in politics?
We have to overturn Citizens United. We have to get big money out of politics. And overturn Citizens United is the first step in that. But we also have to like close off the dark money. We have to stop these special interest groups getting, having opportunities from these billionaires, putting more money into our system. And we have to ban congressional stock trading so these people that are supposed to be representing Iowans are representing Iowans and not making money off their position. They should be working for people and not working for more profits.
So you would help pass laws that would do that.
Yeah, absolutely. To ban congressional stock trading, obviously. And like I said, we need to overturn Citizens United, an amendment to overturn Citizens United so we can get big money out of politics. That is number one. We have to do that. If we want to continue having a country and continue what we're doing, we have to get the big money. That's the biggest problem in our politics, really, is the big money that we have in politics that makes it where these representatives like Ashley Hinson are working for billionaires and corporations and not working for the people they're supposed to represent, because at the end of the day, they know they're more about getting paid by these people than they are representing people.
Another issue, immigration reform.
Yeah. The way I look at it, Iowa's population would be declining. We wouldn't have really a population if it wasn't the immigrants here working the jobs we need them to work right now. So that's my big fear right now is the amount of immigrants and ICE agents and possibly the decline of our population. And the way I look at this world, the way I look at things, a lot of these people here, a lot of these immigrants that have been here working with us, who have been working for us, so some of them for 50 years, some of them are grandpas, some of them have been working here for a very long time. They're working class people just like all of us, just trying to support their families, make it by, trying to be good citizens. They do pay taxes. And I think we need to give them a realistic opportunity to become United States citizens. I think I served with people in the Marine Corps and the Army, British people, Filipino, Mexican, didn't really matter, but they were there to give it a better shot at becoming United States citizens. And the process is wrong. Some of them served two times in Iraq and still weren't citizens. So, we need to give them a good opportunity. That's something that's affordable for people, but also doesn't take years and years and years to complete, they can actually become United States citizens. So, especially for the people that are already here, already working in our communities, already part of the working class, we have to have real, practical immigration reform.
In the meantime, how would you protect them from what's going on right now?
That is a difficult situation. I'd think I'd work with the unions, work with people to figure out what we could do from a legal standpoint to make sure that they're protected. And I think once we come up with a plan to be able to do that, that's what we have to protect people in our communities. We have to be able to bring people together and say we're not going to do this. And I think we're seeing that across Iowa. You're seeing a lot of people come out. You're seeing a lot of protests. You're seeing a lot of people at letting people know when ICE agents are in town. I think that's the first step, but we got to work with the organizations we already have that we can do to try to prevent people being kidnapped off the streets, because that's what we're seeing. We're not seeing deportations, we're seeing literal kidnapping off the streets.
One of the issues that, of course, is very important to at least half the population, and that's a woman's right to her own body. Do you have a position on that?
I am pro-choice, and I am pro-choice, and I will tell you my personal reason for that. You were at the event the other day in Nevada when I said this story before, and I'll tell you again. I have two daughters. You mentioned earlier, I have a 17-year-old and a 13-year-old. My daughters are from my previous marriage with my ex-wife. My wife now has never been pregnant. We've been together 10 years. I never had a baby until we were, last March we got pregnant for the first time. It was my first time with my wife being pregnant. At the end of April, she lost it at 2 o'clock in the morning. Woke up to her crying and screaming and a lot of blood and a lot of issues. And I didn't know what to do. It was very, very hard. It's still very hard. Fast forward to the election in November, and I'm sitting on the couch like all of us, sulking, being upset because we knew what we were seeing with who was being elected president. And I looked over, and my wife was sitting next to me on the couch, bawling her eyes out. And I said, Why are you crying? We've done it before. We've gone through 4 years of this before. Why are you crying? And she said, Now we'll never be able to try again. And I said, Why? And she said, Because what if it happens again? Would I be a criminal? She just started spewing all these questions, just like it was rapid fire questions, issues, things that I had never ever thought of. And in my mind, I'm sitting here going, if my own wife, who's sitting right next to me, is feeling this way in America, there has to be millions of women across the country that feel the exact same way. And I think that's insane. I think that's incredibly insane. I was fortunate enough to come up in leadership led by a lot of very, very, very strong females and women in this world. My mom was a strong woman. My sister's a strong woman. I met a lot of commanding officers that were women, a lot of staff sergeant female NCOs that were in charge of me that were very, very strong women. And my kids, I want my girls, I want to be a very strong woman someday. And so for me, I don't like the idea of thinking of women as second-class citizens. And that's what it feels like with the overturning of Roe versus Wade and the assault on their rights and assault on their rights. We've seen assaults on in Iowa on transgender rights, and it just becomes this thing where it's they're no longer rights anymore, it's privileges. And I'm not okay with that. And we're supposed to be America, we're supposed to be free, we're supposed to be protecting, we're supposed to be opportunity, and it just seems like we're singling out one gender and saying, nope, you're not good enough. And that's insane to me.
There's another issue that tends to divide us a lot, the gun issue and gun control. And do you have a
Yeah.
question on gun control?
Well, when things comes to gun control, I think we need common sense gun laws. We need to look at, I'd like to look at more data. The problem is there's not a lot of data out there when it comes to gun violence. And I'd like to learn more about what needs to be done. My big thing with it, the way I look at it, is I like to look at like the same way I kind of look at cancer, where we sit here and we treat a problem, pour money into treating a problem. I'd like to prevent it. So my thing is to look into mental health crisis and what we can do to put more money into mental health, training to be able to deal with the problems firsthand before it gets to the problem of using guns and shooting them. But I do think we need common sense gun laws, common sense gun reform in this country, because I think it's gotten out of hand. I am not okay with children dying. I'm not okay with my kids going to school and I'm being worried that they're going to get shot at school. And it seems like from what we've had is no strong leadership on both sides of this country, both sides of the aisle, right? Republicans, Democrats, nobody's willing really to do anything. And I think we need strong leadership to make a stand and do something different. And we can't keep doing the same thing over and expect a different result. So we have to come up with some common sense gun laws that we can pass to protect our kids and protect their families.
Should we have a national minimum wage, and what should it be?
I think we need to give people a livable wage. Yes, a livable minimum wage. I've seen a lot of numbers thrown out there. I don't know the exact number that I'd like to see out there. I think I'd need more information on where we can actually make it happen, but we have to raise the federal minimum wage. It's $7.25. It's been that way. But that's also why we need strong unions as well. We need to pass the PRO Act as well so we can fight for workers the way we can fight for workers. And it seems like unions and workers have been, their rights have been stripped away even more and more. The way I look at it too, when you look at the minimum wage, you're seeing these kids out there making $15 an hour at McDonald's already. So it's not that big of crazy thought to start raising the minimum wage because we're already seeing those wages increase. So we need to continue to do that because we need to give kids, especially younger, opportunities to raise a family. And if you're trying to start out a family at not making even, $10 or whatever, it's very hard to make it in this world. And that's why you're seeing the average home, first time home buyer age range up, go up to 38 years old because kids can't afford life anymore. They can't afford it. And families can't afford it right now. And we have to give them a livable wage. So I'd like to see, I don't have a specific number, but I'd like to do more research to understand what we could actually get to because I mean there's a lot of different numbers being thrown out there, but what is practical and what we can get done is what needs to be done.
Well, you've been listening to Conversations with Candidates with Nathan Sage, who's seeking the Democratic Party nomination for the United States Senate for Iowa.